Bill will probably get it. Okay. We'll take care of this. Now it is my privilege to introduce our workshop leader. Please help me offer a warm Tulare County welcome. Our workshop leader, David M. of Hot Springs, California.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Welcome. My name is David Marquez, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. My God-given sobriety is May 9th, 1993. And first thing I'd like to do is thank the Valley Speakers Series Committee for inviting me to do this. I don't know how long they've been doing this. A few years now, I think, right?
A couple years.
And it's nice to come back to Visalia and share my experience, certain hope with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm clear about why I'm here. The only reason I would come up here 5 hours to share with you over the next 5 hours is to be of some kind of service to you through my experience and knowledge of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and having done it and shared it over the last 20 or the 21 years I've been sober. I don't sit up here to propose that I'm some sort of expert, because I'm not, and that I'm merely in service to you to do that. The picture of how we're going to do this, since we have 5 hours, is to simply do 4 one-hour sessions with 15-minute breaks. So the goal is to get through all 12 steps in 4 sessions. We'll see. So, in order to serve you best, you know, I can sit here and start talking about the steps and my experience, but I might be shooting in the dark as to why you're here. And I'm interested to know why you would take an afternoon out of your life to come here to listen to some guy that's coming here 5 hours away talk about the steps. Would any of you care to offer some of that while you're here? Because I'd be watching college football if Teddy hadn't asked me to do this. Quite frank with that. Sir, your name?
Steve.
Steve?
Well, I'm new, and I've never worked with that stuff.
Okay.
I just go in the meeting and figure it out.
Okay. Is this your first time? Is this your first shot, Steve, at AA, or have you been trying it a while?
No, I'm not seeing Al-Anon.
Oh, okay. Are you a double winner, or are you Al-Anon?
No.
Exclusive.
Singular.
Glad right. You're here.
All right.
Yeah.
See, there's a reason for the last 4 chapters, huh, Ted?
I knew he was going to use that as a
Hi, my name is
Dylan. Hi, Dylan.
And I'm here
sober,
and I threw it away. So,
talk about that.
Yeah, so I did that.
Okay. Yes.
I'm Luann. I'm an alcoholic, and I also attend Al-Anon now. I'm between sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
So I have about 6 more years than you do in terms of sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm newly back to Al-Anon. And so I know that my higher power really works through other people. So wanting to be in recovery, I can hear things through other folks that will help me in my recovery.
Okay. I know if Manny was in here, he'd have a question. But if not, so we'll be spared. Anybody else? I'm like an old coat. You don't have to be bashful around me. I've been under all kinds of fire in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I have crocodile skin. And that's okay. I am willing to be in that position at times if God wants me to be in that position. So it's always interesting to me that when people talk about a step study and I go to one, it's really not a step study. Not because of what's being shared, because they're using another piece of literature. There's only one piece of literature that is describes itself, put out by Alcoholics Anonymous, as the AA recovery program. There is no other piece of literature that's described in such a manner. So it's very plainly on the preface that this is the AA recovery program. Published, copyrighted, printed, 1939. And that hasn't changed. So everything else is subsequent to that. Don't hear me say it's not helpful or augmenting, because that would be untrue. But until you can navigate through with a sponsor and higher power through this, the other stuff can be a little confusing. So when I think of a step study, I think of a step study. This is where the steps are. This is where the directions are. Even in this book, another book that is described, the 12 and 12 is described as an interpretive commentary of a co-founder's experience with these steps, or with this program. An interpretive commentary. That's a really interesting description, because if you read the AA history, especially Dr. Bob and Goodoldheimer's, one of the things he stated about this program is that there was no interpretive commentaries necessary. He didn't mean there wasn't going to be any, because obviously there are, right? But that there was no interpretive commentaries or interpretations necessary, and that the most effective way for this program to be successfully practiced, and I'm just paraphrasing, is to just do what it says literally. And in my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous over the 20 years is to do that. Not for my own gain, but to continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness so I can help somebody else. And not just another alcoholic, but in the practice of all my affairs. We have a couple Al-Anons in here. By definition, I'm an Al-Anon. But I'm not an Al-Anon because I don't go to Al-Anon meetings. Okay? My mom does. She is a bona fide Al-Anon. Okay? So, let's get down to brass tacks about our actual program. Okay? Because of the things that we at Alcoholics Anonymous have let come into our room and be sold to us as the AA program, now you have to be very clear about what alcoholism you're talking about when you talk to somebody that's still sick and suffering and they're not sure. And I know from my own experience that I came out of a psych ward for 8 weeks being treated for alcoholism, but it wasn't the same alcoholism that I had that's described in this book. And the solution for their alcoholism isn't described in this book either, nor did it work for me. And so I came out of that, I drank again, and it wasn't until I became convinced, conceded to my innermost self, that I was this alcoholic, did I find it necessary to have to seek this solution. And that took 2.5 years of going to AA meetings, a year and a half of that or so sober. Okay? I'm a slipper, I'm a slider, I'm a trier. Okay? I check in and out of AA rooms just like other people have. Trying to seek some other solution, a lot of them being sold to me, but weren't necessarily the solution in this book. And that wasn't, and that's not the people that I hung, that's not their fault. I still wasn't clear about what I was. I still hadn't gone far enough down the ringer, or so to speak, to become convinced that I had to do this. Okay, until that happened, I was going to continue to look for other alternatives. I can tell you that in the first year and a half around Alcoholics Anonymous, I went to probably 1,000 meetings. I was easily a 3-meeting-a-day person. I hung around very strong Big Book people. I didn't do it with the Big Book, but I hung around it. Okay? And in that year and a half, I never had more than 5 months of sobriety, ever. Most of it was about a week or 2 weeks at most. Okay? I wasn't convinced that I needed a spiritual solution. You know, and I got a sponsor, he's one of these Big Book guys. And one of the things that I wasn't able to connect to was that they were clearly recovered. They were one. My first sponsor was my roommate in the Marine Corps. He got sober 10 months before me. I saw his change. I was still drinking. Okay, and I just thought he changed himself. I thought he just went to these meetings and hung around these folks, and he just somehow changed himself. And so when I was hanging around these guys and they were happy, joyous, and free in sharing in this fellowship of the Spirit, I didn't know what I was looking at. And I just thought that they had all just changed themselves. And that I just somehow couldn't. That I just wasn't, maybe I was just too sick for AA. Maybe I was just too far down the road in a spiritual sickness that God wanted nothing to do with me. I was a lost cause. Okay? And it wasn't enough just to sit across a table from one of these guys and go through the book and reflect on experiences from of craving and obsession and all that stuff for me to become convinced, concede to my innermost self to follow through with the rest of the steps. That I still thought there was something that I could do. I still had other alternatives that I thought, if I pursued those, I didn't have to do this. Okay? And then some of those other alternatives were just getting out of the Marine Corps. You know, it may not be behind bars, but it's certainly doing time. Okay? And thinking about what I would do differently when I get out so I like my life, so I wouldn't drink the way I drink. Okay? And the first thing that happens when you have a tough sponsor, I shouldn't say tough. Tough is the wrong word. I took it as tough because he was just giving me principles and I was being rebellious. But nevertheless, they can become jerks, right? Screw this. I'm not putting up with this stuff. So I got promoted to his sponsor, right? Which was even worse. And as soon as they became jerks, as soon as they lost their pedestal status with me, because me with the big L on my forehead was so clear about what a loser was and what a quitter wasn't. As soon as they lost that pedestal status, I blocked out everything they had to say. As soon as this ego, as soon as this over-high self-esteem pops up, and I think I got the goods on you, I'm not listening to a word you say. You can beat me with a crowbar, I'm still not going to listen to a word you have to say. Okay? So then, because I got this thing in the back of my head about God doesn't want nothing to do with me, and this solution has something to do with God, and even if I'm this person, I'm out of luck. I'm a lost cause. So I do the next thing that was suggested, and it's suggested in our literature, and that is to use the group as a higher power. Okay? And I did that for about that first year. Just like use the group, the home group, as a higher power. Well, a group is just a group of powerless people that have finite power. I'm a person that is beyond human aid that needs infinite power. Okay? Infinite power and love. And so, after several relapses of hanging around the group and doing what the group does and still drinking, it was pretty clear to me that just going to meetings was not going to treat my alcoholism, and it compounded this false idea that I had that I'm just too sick for AA. See, I kept putting them on AA. Okay? I quit AA. I just swore off it. Okay? After 18 months of that, I thought, what's the point? Drunk? Sober? It doesn't matter. It's all miserable. Might as well be miserable and drunk at the same time. I just get something out of it. Right? And I say that like it's a choice, right? And that was part of the problem. Is I thought I was making choices. That each relapse was about a choice rather than lack of power. My head was propping up lies about why I was taking the first drink. That I could believe that, yeah, I'm somehow making a choice to do this, right? When in fact I wasn't. I lacked power. Then I drank again. 10 weeks later, May 9th, 1993, I got a sobriety date I wasn't looking for. I was already discharged from the Marine Corps. It started in Australia. Went through Okinawa, Hawaii. It was a round the world tour, right? And got home and straight drunk at home for about three weeks. And at 11:30 on May 9th of 1993, I was shooting pool at Classic Billiards in Clovis on table 13, because when you're wanting to die, you want to put all the bad luck in your favor, right? And I was drinking, of course, and I got a third beer that morning, and I cracked the bottle, brought it to my lips like this, and I absolutely could not put it in me. Not because I was sick, but I just couldn't drink it. And I threw it in the garbage. Full beer. I hadn't done that since I was probably 13. If I did that, I was 13, right? And I was as mystified by that experience at the time it was happening as I ever have been. And it wasn't until I started going through the steps in this book to start unraveling just that experience. But one thing I knew, regardless of any information I got from AA, is that that was not something that was of me to be capable to do that at that time. I can tell you for sure, at 11:29, at 11:25 a.m., I was not thinking about, well, maybe I ought to stop drinking and turn myself into AA. That was not a thought. It wasn't even a thought when I was throwing it in the garbage. Okay? this is later on, this is when I begin to understand that God does for me what I can't do for myself. That God doesn't even need my consent. He doesn't need my prayers. He doesn't need the credit. He's fine with staying anonymous. And that's what qualifies me as an alcoholic. Nothing short of a higher power that has come between me and alcohol, then, as now, could keep me sober this long. Okay? And if you don't understand that, and you think you're alcoholic, then you may have some holes in your foundation or some cracks in your foundation, just like I was told I had at 7 years sober. All right? So, I was at a meeting 30 minutes later. I was at a noon meeting at Eastside Fellowship in Fresno. I had gone there because I had gone there a year before after I came out of the psych ward. I was on leave, and part of the leave requirement was that I go to meetings while I was on leave. I had a schedule from the central office. I looked at it. It said Beanie Old Winery. I figured I understood the term real alcoholic because I've been in AA for over a year already. And I said, well, I bet you real alcoholics are going to have a meeting in a winery. I'm going to go there. And so that's where I went back to, because I remembered a guy who ended up being my first sponsor and ended up taking me through the steps. His name was Till. But I didn't go into the steps right. I still wasn't convinced. I still hadn't conceded to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. Okay? One of the great questions to ask somebody that's come to you and ask you for help and they're sober, even if it's 5 minutes, you know, are you done? Because I've asked that a bunch of times, and even though I said yes because I just wanted somebody to indulge my BS, okay, in the back of my mind, I didn't think it was true, and it wasn't true. But when I told my sponsor that I was done this on May 9th, there was just something inside me that I knew I was done. No question. And it was such a powerful experience. So I asked the guy to be my sponsor, right? So he says yes. But it was such a powerful experience, and our book talks about this in the family afterward. You have to get back there and check it out.
He's going to stay on me all day. We had a conversation.
And he talks about the two directions after a stirring spiritual experience, which is what an alcoholic has when they're separated from alcohol. We'll talk about that later. Okay? They'll take one of two directions. That is to rebuild their lives financially or to go off into spiritual intoxication. No one had to worry about spiritual intoxication. That would come later. Okay? And so all that's, and I felt empowered just by the removal of the obsession and obviously the craving. Just like Bill talks about. Just like all these guys talked about. Okay? That, wow, without this monkey on my back, now I can get somewhere. I got a 50% shot at least of actually making something of my life, doing some of this stuff that I thought about for 4 years in the Marine Corps. I got a shot at it. I actually had a job interview that day. I was going to go into that job interview loaded. Right? And by the time that interview came at 2 o'clock, I was shaking because I was 10 weeks of drinking, and now I'm sober 5 hours or 4 hours or whatever it is. And I'm shaking. I'm sweating, you know. But in any event, that's what I did. And even though I had this great introduction to AA, these guys in Hawaii that took me under their wing and showed me the book and the truth, and we'll talk, maybe talk more about that later, but that's not what I went back to. I thought to myself, my son self, right, that I'm going to do this for somebody else, because hanging around those Bigfoot guys did not work. Okay? I'm just going to do what the masses are doing. I'm just going to hang out, go to my million meetings a week. I'm going to get into just all the service I possibly can that helps the message be carried, because I don't have a message to carry. I'm going to play volleyball. I'm going to eat ice cream. I'm going to stay in the coffee shops at 2 a.m. and I'll do all that. Huddle in fear and fellowship, right? And that's fine for the people that it works for. And I was so convinced that I was over the drinking problem that I could get away with it. And the book talks about this. The book makes an important qualifier about the two different directions that a new person will go having this experience, and says that, again, paraphrasing, that they feel much better about the guy that's spiritually intoxicated than the guy that's going off and trying to rebuild his life financially. So that's akin to me. See? So I'm into this career. I got hired for that job, by the way. They can see that I had a monkey on my back, and they knew that I would sell and be successful to keep that monkey off my back, right? So, and I was good at it. And I started building this kingdom that I would thought would be conducive to liking my life. I have too much on the line to even think about drinking, you know, having... a sufficiently strong reason to not take the drink. So I had all these third alternatives going on over the course of the year. I had the her, I had the pad, I had more money than I ever made. I have all these structures being built. And I'm sober. I'm going to about one meeting a week, my home group. My home group at the time was Big Wood Thumpers. They used to meet at the DeWitt Center on Sunday evenings. And Hook talks about also that we don't think that any real alcoholic can stay sober on their own anything like a year. But it also throws in some irony in there, and that is, but the real alcoholics probably aren't going to be interested in what this book has to say. So I was into it about a year. And all these third alternatives that I had going on were just off the chart. And I was sitting in a hotel room at the Sonora Inn in downtown Sonora, and there was a shit kicker bar right across the street, the Brass Rail Saloon. It's not there anymore. And it was in the middle of summer, and my windows were open, and all I could hear were the girls squealing, the glasses clinking, and the yeehaw, right? I don't even like country music. Okay? I don't even like cowboy hats. Right? And I was petrified. I was literally petrified in my bed, thinking, if I put one foot on the floor, I am a dead duck. And I said, God, please do not let me put a foot on the floor. I am a dead duck. That's when I began to have an experience with step one. Not just the reflective process that I was introduced to. And I'm saying it was wrong. I wasn't willing to embrace and concede that I was a real alcoholic. Okay? And I went back to old tricks just to make sure I didn't go out there. I mean, I stripped down naked, right? And got in bed. Because I thought, well, maybe if I do put a foot on the floor, at least maybe I'll think twice while I'm putting clothes on, right? And so I canceled all my appointments that night, had the TV turned up, window closed, till that all that stuff at the bar was done. Hopped up early that morning, hauled ass back to Fresno, got in front of Till, and I was terrified. I was terrified of another day sober, but I was equally terrified of drinking again. I was at what the book describes as the jumping off place. Wishing to get away with a half dozen drinks. Wishing for the end. See, if you're a real alcoholic and you're powerless, you have no power in determining when you go from the place of jumping off and jumping off. And you also have no power over deciding if that jumping off is going to include alcohol or not. Our book is very clear that dying an alcoholic death doesn't necessarily have to require alcohol. It talks about resentments destroying more alcoholics than anything else. Fear is a driver for all resentments. So that puts fear in that category. It talks about selfishness kills. Okay? It doesn't say selfishness plus alcohol. Alright? So, that includes an AA. Selfishness and self-will in AA, or AA, in the name of AA, right, is no less dangerous than that selfishness and self-centeredness anywhere else. Okay. So, conceding to our innermost self. Would anybody like to offer up what an alcoholic is or why they think they're alcoholic? Final Jeopardy. Okay, so okay. Let's talk about that. We'll talk about Manny over there in a second. Because I got DUIs too. I know some people that got DUIs that aren't alcoholic. So let's talk about the craving. The first part of the book, from the doctor's opinion to about page 23, the primary focus is what happens to us once we start to drink, which would be the craving. Okay? Why is it that once I put alcohol in my system, I have little control in stopping, if any? Okay? Why does that happen? So it's described as an allergy. Once I take a drink, this craving is set off, it's beyond my mental control to stop. I didn't believe that. When they told me that, I thought they were brainwashing me. I thought that AA was just trying to collect people to grow their membership. Alright, sell more books. AA wouldn't do that. Okay? So, this is a true story. Alright? Now, I've been through the book with these guys in Hawaii. You gotta understand, I didn't do very well in the meetings themselves. How many have I got for me?
Yeah. Okay. 21.
Okay. Alright. So I didn't do well in meetings. Everybody said everything that they said was the program, so I got lost. And I got frustrated and I got angry and I got scared. So these guys would throw me in a booth at a coffee shop, and they would say, "What did you hear?" Not who said it. "What did you hear? This is what I heard. Well, let's look what the book says." So I had that much introduction to the book to know that there is a difference between what I may hear in a meeting and what the actual program is. So if I ever thought I had to actually do the program, at least I knew where to find it. And that came, right? So I didn't believe it at first. And so I think, well, book says that I'm gonna go find out. The doctor's opinion says that any amount of alcohol, an alcohol can't drink any amount of alcohol safely. Okay? I'm willing to test that. Okay? If you want to find out the truth about anything in the book, test it. Either test it by doing it or not doing it. See what happens. Okay? I encourage that. And so I went to this bar, and I had went to a bar that had entertainment on a stage, in a brass bowl, because I need entertainment. And, this isn't All Addictions Anonymous? Okay. So, lady comes around, the cocktail waitress comes around, she goes, "What do you have?" I said, "I'll have a no duels." And she gives me this look at like I'm a wuss first, and then she says, "Okay, all right." And she brings over the O'Doul's. I drink the O'Doul's, and I go, "I don't feel anything. Nothing's happening here." I knew it, but just to be sure, I better get another one. So she comes back around. And she goes, "What do you want?" I said, "I'll have an O'Doul's." She gave me the same look again. She's really hitting that pride right there. Right? And so, here's this Marine. I'm not going to say big and bad because I'm not, but here's this Marine doing a duel in a grilling bar. So she said, "O'Doul." I drink the O'Doul. I hit that second one. I go, "Now I'm convinced." I knew it. They're just trying to brainwash me. They are completely crazy, right? See, when I would relapse, I wasn't the guy that got a head full of AA and a belly full of booze and felt guilty. By the time I was drinking, you guys were so full of BS, you didn't even know. You had no guilt at all. You should be like lucky I even showed up, right? But anyway, so she comes back around. She goes, "What do you want?" I said, "I'll have a Budweiser, because I'm convinced now." Right? She didn't give me that look. Right? Oh, like finally, I get on board with the program here. Right? So the next thing I know, is I'm coming to an alley with an empty bottle of Jack Daniels with me. Right? And I have no recollection. It was like a brownout, right, of what happened in between there. And so after a few days of that run, I came back to AA with my tail tucked between my legs, and I go to my new sponsor where I was promoted, right? I said, "What happened?" Right? And he said, and I told him what happened. He said, "Did you read the label on that O'Doul's?" I go, "No." He goes, did you even notice the part that said non-alcoholic beer? "No, didn't notice that." He says, "You know why it says that? It's for non-alcoholics." "That's not you." I said, "But I didn't feel anything." And he said, "Dumbass." It's because you don't feel the craving. It just happens. And it never occurs in the average temperate drinker. Now here's where we get hooked as alcoholics. It doesn't always occur, or it doesn't always occur with the same ferocity in an alcoholic. And that's where we get tricked. So maybe I get lucky. Random success with booze, right? The 1 out of 10 times where I didn't go to the ER room, or I didn't go to the jail, or I didn't, you know, some family member or whatever. I'm not puking my guts up. I'm not feeling like crap coming to. I'm actually in my own bed, right? I made it through the couch, right? That's successful, right? Oh, yeah. It's the Coors Light. It's the Coors Light. I'll just drink the Coors Light. There's nothing in it. And then you go out and drink Coors Light, and you're right back where you were when you drank Jack Daniels. You go, "Well, what happened there? It worked before." And this is where we get hooked. And this is what puts us in a place that's even scarier than thinking you know what happens once you start to drink, is that is you don't know. you know, at some point it's going to be off the table, but at this point you can't, you don't even know when and where and how. How many? Okay. Just, I'm going to wrap it up here. There's two places, two statements in the book that are very telling about the craving. One is in the doctor's opinion. Talks about these guys weren't drinking to escape. They're drinking to overcome a craving that was beyond their mental control. Which means simply, if that's not simple enough, once I start, I cannot decide to stop when I want to. Period. I might get lucky once in a while. I cannot stop once I start as an act of the will. The craving overrides the mind. The craving is physical. The only thing that triggers craving is alcohol. Okay? Even the worst of drunks will take 7 to 10 days of detox. And if you still want to drink after that, that is not craving, that's obsession. We'll talk about that after the break. There's another line that... You got time?
Yeah, you have a few minutes.
Okay. So, once an alcoholic puts any amount of alcohol into his body, it's virtually impossible for him to stop. That's 22. One of the techniques that I learned from my sponsors was turning statements into questions, because I have this thing about not attaching me to this or anything else. Use the self-centeredness to my advantage and make the book about me, because it is. Right? Is it true, David, is it true in my experience that once I take a drink, it's virtually impossible for me to stop? Under any circumstances? Yes. And even simpler, back on page 44, where it kind of wraps up step one. Okay? I'll even read it to you real quick. I don't want to butcher it. People think I have this thing memorized, and I don't. If when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. That's talking about the craving. There's another part of that we'll talk about in this session, but does that happen to me once I drink? Once I take the first drink? Okay. If this is you, undoubtedly you know that this is you. Let me ask you this. This is going to be a springboard to the next several steps. How did you get a sobriety? If it's beyond your mental control to stop, and you're stopped, if it's virtually impossible for you to stop once you start, how you stopped, how do you have your current sobriety date right now? And we'll break for 15 minutes and we'll come back at 1:30.
Yeah. We're going to actually break for 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Or 12 minutes.
12 minutes.
Now it's 11.